There's no other show quite like The Ron Van Dam Show. Thank God for that. Oh, can you imagine if there were two of these or more? Whoa, that is a world I do not want to live in. There's only one, and it's enough. This is The Ron Van Dam Show on New England Broadcasting.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, good night. It's The Ron Van Dam Show.
Thank you very much.
Hold on tight, things can get a bit weird, if you like that sort of thing.
Thank you for making The Ron Van Dam Show your happy place. It's so funny. Is this your happy place? You got problems. Is this your happy place? You know what they say, if you can't make yourself laugh, you can't make anybody laugh at all. I guess that's my problem. Hey, welcome to the happy place. How you doing? Good to be with you. You're looking so good today. Did you comb your hair? You did, didn't you? Whoa, you look good. Made an appointment yesterday with my hairstylist. I have a hairstylist. We've been through this before. We've been down this road before. I have a hairstylist. When I was younger, I had a barber. That was a man who cut my hair, who touched my head. Now I have a hairstylist. It's a woman. And she treats my hair with love and kindness. Having my hair cut is a nurturing experience. It's an event for me. It's an event. It's that moment when the reveal comes after they've done stuff to your hair. And you look in the mirror and they say to you, okay, thank you. And you look in the mirror and that's the big reveal. And you look better than when you came in. If you don't, you go into the wrong hairstylist. But you always look better than when you came in. And that's what they bank on, you know, that's what gets you back. Hey, are you better off today than you were 4 years ago? This is presidential candidates. Well, it's the same with hair. Do you look better now than when you walked in? Well, yes, I do. Then I win. And you tip me heavily. I want to talk about tips today. Steak tips. Aren't they tasty? Aren't they tasty? I want to talk about tips. And I want to talk about the American system of getting things done. And the system is corrupt and sucks. Ron, how dare you say that? Oh, shut up. This happened to a friend of mine yesterday, and she told me the story that just nooked my cranny, set me on my ass ablazing. Here's the story. She works in a restaurant. And they don't get minimum wage in a restaurant. They get a lower amount. But they have the opportunity to make tips, and they do very well making tips. This girl was shopping, and when she came out, there was a table in front of the supermarket, and there were people at the table with all these petitions. And they were trying to solicit people coming out of the supermarket over to their table with all these clipboards and petitions. And they said, excuse me, could you sign a petition for us, please? And this girl said, what about? says, well, this is about restaurant workers, the wait staff. This is to get them to minimum wage. And would you sign the petition? And she said, well, I'm a restaurant worker, and I'm very happy with what I'm making. I'm making less than minimum wage on a check, but I'm getting tipped very, very well. And I'm afraid that if you get a minimum wage, that people stop tipping us and the restaurants go out of business and all this. And the guy at the table said, well, you don't know what you're talking about. He says, you don't know what you're talking about. You don't work in a restaurant. I do, and I'm telling you my opinion, and I don't want to sign your petition. I think it's a bad idea. And the guy started arguing with her in front of the supermarket. If you're going to argue with somebody, not in front of a supermarket. And she got pissed. Well, she told me the story, and as I am in the media, you are, Ron, I didn't know that. Oh, come on, you do know that. I started poking around, not only on the internet of highways, but also some of my sources, and I said, you know, these people that stand in front of supermarkets and try to get people's signatures so they can get something on the ballot and get something passed, how does that work? Do these people who are trying to get signatures, do they get paid to be there? Or they are really advocates and they're like people themselves that are trying to change the law? And the response was, across the board, no, these people don't give a shit about what you're signing. They are hired to get signatures. That's not democracy. They are paid to get signatures. It's a job. That's what they do. You mean they're not people who work in restaurants and are trying to get conditions changed, and they're not people that are trying to strike down certain laws? No, they're not. They're paid people, paid to get signatures. They are professional people who argue and persuade you to sign that sheet. Well, who hires them? The people that want the signatures to go through. They hire people to convince people to sign the paper no matter what the paper says. And how much do these people who stand in front of supermarkets with clipboards and little TV stands, TV tables, how much do they get? They get between $5 to $20 per signature. Are you serious? Those phony bastards. $5 to $20 per signature? Yes. They don't care what you're signing. They're getting paid to have people sign that sheet on that clipboard. And they'll argue you into signing it if they can. Well, I did find out that that's not the case all the time, but it is most of the time. And that is low. That's low. Because the impression by the public is, oh my goodness, someone's standing there with a clipboard in front of a supermarket. They're really advocating for themselves to help out society. No, they're hired to get signatures to make money. All they want to do is to get you to sign the damn thing. We want to put Hitler back on the ballot. Will you sign? No. Well, come on, I can get $5 if you sign it. This is awful. This is an awful thing about democracy. Sometimes I question whether this is really a democracy or a democracy facade. And I'm starting to find out, the more I've dug into things over the years, it's a democracy facade. It is a country that is ruled and run by people who seek power. And when they're in power, they can take care of their people and get paid to do so under the table. Ron, does that really work that way? Oh, you know it does. So the we continue with the facade democracy. It looks like our votes matter. It looks like what we say makes a difference. It looks like we put representatives into Congress that represent us. It all looks good. It's a facade. Now, nothing's 100%. It's not 100% facade, but the percentage is definitely in the facade category. Oh, man. Just another check on the checklist of things that have disappointed me about society. And the list grows all the time. Anyway, something happened in Congress today, actually yesterday. There was a unanimous vote in the Senate to reinstate the formal dress code. Now, I know you're saying, Ron, you know, with everything you're talking about a dress code. Yes, because that's the basis of one's decorum, respect, tradition, that kind of thing. You got to start with a base, baby. Yeah, as I said on yesterday's show, the show before that, it bothered me that Congress would have no dress code. Chuck Schumer, the president of the Senate, said because of John Fetterman, who loves to dress in hoodies and shorts and sneakers when he goes to his congressional seat on Capitol Hill. The Senate president there, Chuck Schumer, said, yeah, okay, let's drop the dress code of the formal dress code. And I said, no, what are you fucking kidding me? What are you serious? I mean, what are you trying to just banish everything that makes any kind of sense whatsoever? So there was so much of an outcry, and I don't believe it's because of my opinions on this show, although it may have something to do with it, but I don't think so. But it makes me feel good that I won. Anyway, so Chuck Schumer said, no, we're going to reverse what I came up with before. No, there is a formal dress code in Congress and in the Senate. Thank you. Okay, now let's talk about the important stuff. After we need to have a basis of rules and respect and decorum and all that kind of stuff. We need to make the facade stronger. If we're going to have a facade democracy, we got to make it look like that better. So John Fetterman now, man, you can't wear the hoodies and the shorts on the congressional floor anymore. Sorry. You know, people who dress just to be lazy, and I do it myself sometimes. I sometimes look like a schmuck in public. And as soon as my wife points it out, that's the end of that. You know, don't these congressional people who don't dress well, don't they have wives? I mean, and it's not husbands, it's the wives that say, stop the shit. Just cut it out and stop the shit. That's the job of the wife. A lot of men think it's the wife's job is to give them sex on a, you know, so you don't have to go chasing after it. You know, it just happens now normally. That's not their job. It's not their job. Their job is to keep you in line, guys, because men seriously don't know what staying in line is. They don't know. They have no concept. We think we do, but we don't. And whether it's your wife or your girlfriend doesn't make any difference. And it has to be a female. Sorry, but it does. Or if you're if you're gay in a gay relationship, one of you has to take on the role of keeping the other one in line. I mean, it's just the way it works. That's what partnerships are. They double check each other. But it's more one over the other than both equally. And in the case of a heterosexual relationship, it's the woman that keeps the man in line. Don't argue with me. It's a fact. It's in the Bible. It's the sixth commandment that Moses came with down the mountain. It is what it is. That's just it. As soon as you accept what really is, you'll be better off. Stop fighting it. Just go with it. When your significant other says, you actually going to go out looking like that? you know that you're not. Go upstairs, change your clothes, comb your hair. Just shut up and do it. Don't waste time arguing about your freedom. We spend so much time arguing about our freedom.
I can do what I want.
No, you can't. You can't do what you want. You can't do what you want in your relationship, and you can't do what you want in society. It doesn't work like that. Get a clue. It never did.
No, I have First Amendment rights. I can say whatever I want to say.
No, you can't. No, you can't. Donald Trumpy, when you claim that somebody should get the death penalty or be hung or should be assassinated or somebody is ruining something, your supporters will go out and actually go out and assassinate the person. Do you realize that, Donald, or are you so stupid? Shut your goddamn mouth and stop putting people down. I mean, God. I'm sorry to get into the Trump thing. There's one thing that he said recently that came out in a Cassidy Hutchinson interview book. She was there. She heard it on January 6th, or leading up to that horrible day. Mark Meadows, who is Trump's, kiss ass, get me coffee guy. Cassidy Hutchinson's. Here's this, and there's no question other people heard it too, similar situations. Trump says to Mark Meadows, I know I lost the election, but don't let anybody know. Don't give the appearance of it. It's embarrassing. I know I lost the election. But don't let anybody know that, because it's embarrassing. And that's what it was all about. His personality, that he would be embarrassed. Trump doesn't lose. Instead, he makes it look like he won and attempts to do so because it's embarrassing to lose. Trump never, and he said this in public, he even published it in his book way back, never admit that you made a mistake. It's a sign of weakness. It all falls into line. It has nothing to do with you or the country or the cult following or anything, and it's all about him. His father engraved that into his head. His father said, Donald, never admit that you're wrong. It's a sign of weakness. Never let anybody know if you've lost. It's all in black and white. Oh, man. All right. We'll talk about that. I just didn't want to talk about it. I'm getting back to the horror of 2016. All over again. I thought that we put that one to bed. No, it's not in bed. It's coming out of the bed now. Gonna go through this crap all over again. And that's why I say, when it comes to New Year's Eve in a couple of months, don't ring in the new year, because you're ringing in one of the most horrible years you will ever find. Because if Trump loses the election in 2014, you're going to have hell to pay, because he don't lose and he don't leave and he don't go quietly or at all. There'll be an uprising, and you'll have your life will be quite different in this country. That's all going to happen next year. If Trump wins, you have a similar situation, perhaps even worse. So, man, next year is going to be a shit show that you can't even imagine. Get ready for it. Strap yourselves in. 2014 is not going to be a fun ride for anybody, because someone's going to lose big time. All right. My guest is going to join us momentarily. Sorry for the political leanings in the show. But first, a commercial break, so don't go anywhere.
Hello, this is Father Mike Slannery from the Our Lady of the Sacred Spatula Church here in town, and I'm excited to tell you about a thrilling new addition to our monthly Friday night bingo game lineup. In addition to classic favourites like Coverall and Four Corners, we'll now be adding Full Contact Bingo. That's right, Full Contact. That's where the friendly community game you love meets the hard-hitting action of football and hockey that you crave. Is Mrs. Smith about to call bingo before you? Hit her with a cross check or crash her into the boards. I should mention that all full contact games will take place in the street hockey rink behind the parish function hall where the Our Lady of the Sacred Spatula Fighting Sons of Leviticus hold their matches. Protective gear is recommended and weapons are not allowed. And if you feel bad about taking out a friend or neighbour so you can win a few bucks at the bingo, I will be on hand to take your confession. That all starts next Friday night at the parish hall at the Our Lady of the Sacred Spatula Church, 27 Eucharist Way, right downtown. We'll see you there.
Hi, Joanna.
Hi, Ron. How are you?
I'm great. This is Joanna Ho. She's a New York Times bestselling author. She's written more books than anybody in the world. Eyes That Kiss in the Corners, Eyes That Speak to the Stars, Playing at the Border, Story of Yo-Yo Ma, The Silence That Binds. I could go on forever one day. And now she's got a new book that's come out that is really fascinating because it broaches a subject that I've thought about frequently, and that's our names, where we come from, what those names mean. Thanks for doing that, by the way.
Oh yeah, thank you.
It is an important topic, but again, it's a topic that we just don't. I'll be honest with you; it's embarrassing sometimes when I see somebody's name. I want to pronounce it correctly because that's their name, and you must respect that. But I can't pronounce it, and I don't know how, and I'm embarrassed, and that makes it difficult, especially for someone like me who interviews people. Is that embarrassment typical?
I think it might be. I think that what I would say is, there are so many different names, and we don't all grow up speaking right. The languages where all of these names come from, so I don't think that embarrassment... it's just like, I don't think there's anything wrong with just saying, hey, how do you pronounce your name?
Yeah.
And I think that that's something people really appreciate is when you're aware and you're learning and you're asking, that matters. Even if you can't, your tongue won't make the sounds the way they're supposed to be spoken in their native language.
Yeah.
Just the effort itself matters.
Yeah. And a lot of our names, and some of us don't even know this, is not really our names. They've been shortened over the years for for the very reason of making it more accessible and easier to say, right? Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. That's actually one reason I wrote the book is my mom is the youngest of 10 mm-hmm. children, and they're from Taiwan. And many of her sisters, when they came to the U.S., changed their names into very Western names. And there's so much that's lost. When you lose your original name, there's so much meaning and history and intentionality, that's completely lost when you're trying to make yourself more acceptable to people especially at that time, we're not trying.
Yeah, it's not necessarily because people can't pronounce your name. It's because there's a need to fit into the new society.
Right, but it's also because people don't try. Like my mom, I grew up listening to her answer, or I'd answer the phone, and her name is Wan Ling, W-A-N-L-I-N-G.
Right.
And people would be like, Wing Long, Wang Lang, and then sometimes like Wendy. Yeah. So sometimes there's just, people don't try, and that I think is harmful as well.
Yeah. Now you express this concept through the life stories of six children,
yeah,
and and what they've gone through and where they're from and what their culture is. And I mean, these days, I thought that we were progressing as far as being civil to each other was concerned, but I think we've taken a giant step backwards all of a sudden.
Yeah.
So this is like a refresher. Yeah, this is a refresher course into what it like. People are people. Let's get on the wagon again here. On the wagon or off the wagon?
I don't even know. Okay. Yeah, it's true. Yeah. I think that, like, to what you're saying, in terms of taking a step backwards, you know, there are so many ways that to be overwhelmed by what we see happening. Mm. And I think that something that seems as small and sometimes as seemingly insignificant as a name is also just one way that you're showing people that you see them, that you want to see them, the whole them, and as humans and all that they bring. And, you know, whether you're talking, you know, you could be overwhelmed by seeing like fighting in school boards against book banning or all these other ways that we're trying to just see each other for our humanity, and just acknowledging people's names is one small step that all of us can take.
Yeah. It is representative, but then there are people that say, well, what's in a name? You're a person. A name is just the label that you have. I can see that, but sometimes when you dismiss the name, you're dismissing the culture as well.
Yeah, and also the meaning or just intense, you know, like when you choose a name as a parent, you're not just like, oh, any random set of syllables, and, you know, phonetics sound great.
Right.
And so I think in this story, it goes through the stories of six children who are from different backgrounds that include Diné or Navajo, you know, Mexican, Tongan, Persian, Ghanaian, Chinese, and it talks about the story or the meanings behind their names. And so it's not true that's just what's in a name. I think there's a lot in a name, and that's why it's important for us to not just, you know, ask about them, but also to try to pronounce them correctly.
Yeah. It's interesting that you choose children because, I mean, you know, if you think back to everybody think back to their childhood, most of their life is based on what their foundation was and the experiences that you had in that short period of time within one lifetime molds you for the rest of it, whether you like it or not. And so I'm glad you're focusing on that. Yeah.
Thanks. You know, also as an educator, I worked in school for so long and you just hear horror stories really of teachers who won't try or teachers who give students nicknames, which really shifts their whole perception of who they are and what it means to be a learner or a successful learner. And when you do that, you really take away so much from a child.
I think nicknames are horrible. It does take away from what they were given, and sometimes you're branded, and that, you know, you're branded by that nickname,
that's
and then everybody calls you that, and it's like, whoa, hey, you know, now we're making we're going much further than we should here. Yeah, I agree with you on that.
And I think like a nickname that a child likes or one that comes out of love and from friends and family is different than one that comes from someone who,
well, sometimes that can be pretty branding.
Kind of say your name.
That can be pretty branding
too,
though.
It's true. That's true. And my last name is Ho.
Yeah.
There are a lot of fun. I mean, that's another thing is, you know, for me growing up in middle school and high school, lots of fun nicknames that I didn't love.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, that's the great thing about American people. We like to shame people by mistake or on purpose. this is a picture book, I understand.
That's right.
And
illustrated by Kwale.
Uh-huh. And how did that transform into a picture situation?
Yeah, I always write picture books. I think the beautiful thing about picture books is I write the text and then I, you know, submit it to my editor, and then I don't interact with the illustrator at all, typically in a picture book making process.
Mm-hmm.
And so the beautiful thing is that the illustrator is able to add all these layers of meaning from their own experiences into the text. So when I see the final art, it's always this really moving experience because the book has become so much more than it was even when I first wrote it.
Wow.
So that's always really amazing.
It's a fascinating book, and it's a book that should have been done, and now it has been. Joanna Ho is the author, and check out her other stuff too because it's pretty awesome. The name of the book is Say My Name, and as she just said, don't be embarrassed to say. And how do you pronounce your name? That's okay to do. You're not admitting that you're stupid. Although that could be the case, but that has nothing to do with what's going on here. It's always a possibility. Is there a website that we can visit that we can read all of your doings?
Yeah, absolutely. It's Joanna Ho Writes. So Joanna Ho, and then the word write.
Perfect. Hey, it's been a pleasure speaking to you. Thank you very much for your time today.
You too.
Okay.
Thank you so much.
Take care, Joanna. Well, that'll do it for me today. Thank you to my guests. Thank you to you. I'll be back again tomorrow with a brand new program. But until that time arrives, go to your hairstylist. It'll make you feel good about something. I wish you peace.